Exchange-wise, ATS Singapore returns to the Sands Exhibition Centre on July 3rd. Grab your tickets now to secure your place. You'll hear the latest on retail media, live commerce, and the impact of AI on the industry, plus much, much more. Join your peers in an outstanding lineup of speakers as we shed light on the challenges and innovations in media marketing and commerce. The Mad Tech Podcast Special, focusing on the most important topics in ad tech and martech.
Hello and welcome to another Mad Tech Podcast Special. My name is Amy Newell-Tarine. I'm an editor at ExchangeWire, and I'm joined today by Jasmine Dawson, Senior Vice President Digital at BBC Studios. Welcome, Jasmine. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Yeah, it's great to have you as a guest. So today we'll be getting into some of what's going on behind the scenes at BBC Studios, looking at the role of the digital team, the factors that impact choosing a partner or sponsor, as well as touching on the BBC's commercialization. So just to start with, could you tell us a bit about your role at BBC Studios?
Sure. So I've been at Studios for just over 5 years, and I've been SVP of Digital for the last couple of years. I think sort of understanding where BBC Studios sits as part of the BBC group is really fundamental to our sort of understanding what my role is. BBC is obviously very, very well known within the UK. BBC Studios is the commercial arm. So it has a sort of international footprint across the globe, ensuring that sort of our content and services outside of the UK are supported, and we distribute sort of the best loved IP across channels and different streaming services all around the world. We also commercialize as part of that. And part of that commercialization sits with me to monetize our audiences across our digital real estate. So that very much is sort of thinking about how are we thinking about our fan bases for our much loved IP, whether it's Bluey, whether it's Doctor Who, whether it's BBC Earth or Top Gear. How we generate that community and across not only our social accounts from like TikTok to YouTube to Snapchat, but then also across web, across CRM, across audio and podcasts. For us, our primary purpose is to be able to absolutely dial into that sort of fan base, and then we can monetize those audiences, which allows us to make more content, and that sort of that circle of, you know, distributing content, making it work for those platforms, and then monetizing on top of that makes the content pipeline grow.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. Could you go into a bit more detail about how you monetize?
Sure. So I would say we have very much focused on sort of how we monetize across social video, and have started to diversify that approach over the last year or so. So the sort of bread and butter for us is sort of monetizing on YouTube and also on vertical video through TikTok and others. We've recently done a deal for TikTok Pulse to be able to monetize our IP on there. However, we have been monetizing on YouTube for over a decade. And that essentially is us building brands on YouTube, building those fan bases, commissioning and curating our own content. So making sure our content works in that space, and being able to sell our pre-roll on there, as well as more curated things such as sponsorships and branded content. And that is something that whilst we have been doing the pre-roll part of the business for a long, long time, branded content and sponsorships and those sort of bigger, more integrated opportunities has only sort of been available for the last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for those insights about how it's all working behind the scenes. How is the BBC kind of further commercializing at the moment?
I think, well, BBC Studios has been commercializing BBC sort of content and services for a long time. For us, it is really being thoughtful about how we can amplify that opportunity across that digital real estate and make that money. I think it's sort of really key to understand that the money that we make goes back into the content budget, and therefore sort of it is like making sure that sort of, you know, our relevance and sort of the content that we make is that's where we are driving that profit. But ultimately, we're doing this to be able to further the BBC and making sure that it's still relevant for, you know, years and years to come. And we believe that we've got a sort of fantastic array of brands and a diverse portfolio that has advertiser appetite. So people want to be in a brand safe environment, as well as being able to align themselves with some fantastic global IP. You know, we, whilst, you know, obviously we're very well known in the UK, what's not well known is that we have a global reach, and we did over 10 billion video views across our social portfolio last year because we've got a fantastic portfolio. So, you know, Bluey is an absolute standout star in our portfolio and is, you know, Australian born, but definitely sort of like global resonance. But then we have, you know, everything from sort of comedy brands to our own brands that we've started in comedy, such as Funny Parts, to sort of longstanding sort of brands such as Only Fools and Horses on our BBC Comedy Greats channel, to then sort of legacy brands like Doctor Who and Top Gear. So there's a lot to be associated with. There's a lot of opportunity. I think that's why we're really trying to sort of shout about it, because I think it hasn't necessarily been known that we can do this.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, it's a really amazing opportunity for advertisers. There's such good quality content that they can align themselves with. And yeah, it's a very brand safe environment, of course. And there's, yeah, such a diverse range of content. So it's a really good opportunity for advertisers, definitely. And with the podcast commercialization that BBC is currently doing, so yeah, obviously that's been kind of criticized in the media and by broadcasters. What does the BBC feel about that?
I think from my perspective, and what's important for BBC Studios, is that we commercialize so that we can keep the fantastic content pipeline of the BBC alive and future-proof it for new generations to come. So I definitely appreciate that sort of there was going to be mixed feelings about a public service broadcaster sort of monetizing a particular platform. But I think, you know, we have been monetizing our social platforms in the UK for a long, long time. And I think what is key to note is that all of that money flows back in to the content pipeline, and that we've got to be thoughtful about being relevant for the future. So I think BBC Studios' role in that is to make choiceful sort of decisions about where we monetize, and do it with strategic intent, and making sure that where we do decide to monetize in the UK, and this isn't, you know, there was obviously only, it was only a UK reaction because of the license fee. But I think we make tough decisions sort of every day to make sure that we are monetizing with the right intent, that we're making the best content decisions that we can, so that we're serving our audiences in the best way.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I think as well, a lot of people now are starting to realize that a lot of the time for quality content, you will, you know, expect ads or some kind of payment. As with, I mean, like Amazon Prime obviously introduced their the ads to their service, and then also with Netflix's ad tier, I think, yeah, it's just something becoming much more common that people expect to see ads with quality content. Yeah,
exactly. And I think your point there about quality content is so important, right? And, you know, if we align ourselves against our competitors, Netflix, Disney, as you say, sort of Amazon Prime, everyone's sort of either talking about or has sort of an advertising layer, we need to be able to compete. And, you know, we want to be relevant, and therefore we have to be able to compete. And it's sort of studio's job to make sure that we can.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. Yeah. So now moving on to the digital team, could you tell us a bit more about how you connect brands with partners and sponsors across the world?
So we've got a dedicated sales team within our digital division. They are experts in their field. They understand platforms like no other. And that allows them to not only understand our brands and our content portfolio, but also what's going to work And it's sort of, it's great having an idea, but you need to make sure that you have that cut through. We obviously know, you know, digital is a very noisy place and it's really hard to have that cut through. So you need a sales team that can bring you great ideas, that understand the sort of the content IP that we're working with, but also understand the advertising challenges that are in sort of the market right now and the challenges that are facing the media industry as an overall. For me, that's where we sort of sit in a really interesting space, and the fact that we are brand safe, we've got fantastic IP that is global and resonates, we've got huge fan bases, which allows us to sort of have a really unique sort of offering into the advertiser community. We're seeing a huge appetite. We massively over-delivered against our targets last year, which I'm hugely sort of appreciative of the sales team for. But for me, it goes back to the sort of fundamentals of understanding platforms, understanding our content, and understanding the challenges that face the advertisers.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And then what are some of the factors that actually impact which partners and sponsors brands like BBC work with?
That's a great question, because we don't want to work with everybody. Because first of all, you know, we've got sort of editorial sort of guidelines. And that is really about sort of the integrity of the BBC at the heart of it. So whilst we want to be able to grow, we have to make choices. And the things that sort of matter to us are things such as like sustainability within sort of our sort of factual content portfolio, as well as sort of thinking about sort of, you know, children's mental health and being thoughtful about sort of screen time and sort of how we're engaging audiences during that screen time. So there are a lot of factors at play. But for me, there are some, you know, very clear sort of understanding on sort of where we shouldn't go. But I'm always up for a sort of debate and sort of, you know, we'll definitely have those with agencies and brands themselves as to how it can be made to work. But I think that sort of the three things are, you know, are you applicable for the genre? We always want to be authentic to our audiences, and we're not going to market something that feels forced. You know, we are a brand safe environment and we make that commitment to our audiences. So we also need to be thoughtful of that. And then also sort of, you know, for me, creative matters. And a brand can be right, but the creative and the creative messaging may be wrong. And we're never going to censor, but I think it's also really important to be thoughtful about a genuine integration and making sure that sort of, you know, it cuts both ways and that editorially we have to sort of really stay true to what makes us part of the BBC.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned authenticity, because that's something that's becoming so much more important, I think, in recent years than, I mean, I guess it's always been important, but I think now more than ever, really.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I can't remember who said it, but it's a quote that I really like. It's like, you know, you need to, if you're going to stand for something, you have to stand for it all the time. And sort of authenticity, you know, goes along with sort of trust when it comes to, for me, sort of the values of the BBC. And that is something that we really try to sort of hold on to, because it also is what makes us special. Out on the market as well, because I don't think everyone could necessarily say, you know, brand safety, sort of the impartiality and trust and being authentic and relevant.
Yeah, it's a hugely respected brand. So, yeah. And what are some of the key ways to keep legacy brands relevant to today's audiences?
Yeah, I found that a really interesting question, because I think it's sort of, when does it become a legacy brand? And I think we've definitely got ones that fit in that bucket, right? A legacy brand such as Doctor Who, which has been, you know, around for, you know, over 60 years, definitely, you know, comes with legacy, comes with a fantastic back catalogue, but has regenerated. And, you know, in sort of the partnership with Disney, has become, you know, a sort of a global icon again. And I know there are some audiences of Doctor Who which will say it's never not been a global icon, because we do have sort of such an amazing global fan base that are just so in touch with sort of every episode, and, you know, are sort of very vocal about their passion across all of our platforms for Doctor Who. But what's been fantastic about this regeneration is it's brought in new audiences. And the way we have done that has been thoughtful about how do we both speak to the current audience, but also in partnership with Disney, how do we bring in that new audience? Is what's going to excite them, pique their interest? And for us, we have used sort of three key things. So innovation, so being thoughtful about sort of, you know, real life, sort of real world experiences. And sort of, you know, we sort of played on the fact that sort of some of our talent have been in sort of, you know, big cultural moments sort of the year. So Shruti was also in Barbie. And therefore, you know, the sort of pink TARDIS was something that was sort of really intriguing to us and sort of managed to tap into a sort of a cultural moment, but also was incredibly relevant for us. There's also things that sort of we have done sort of really focused on sort of digital tactics. So thinking about the talent we use. So we commission a lot of original content. We've worked with sort of emerging talent within both the podcast and the social video space to bring in those new audiences and sort of regenerate this legacy brand for a whole new audience. So we have a sort of YouTube original series with Tyrell Charles, as well as a sort of season two of our podcast for Doctor Who, which has brought in sort of new talent and new audiences as well. So for us, it's about being sort of native to the platform and telling new stories in new ways that allows you to kind of take an amazing legacy brand like Doctor Who and get new fans excited about something that they may have never have heard of before, all around the world as well.
Yeah, it's great to see how Doctor Who's become so much more global now.
Yeah,
yeah, it's really exciting, yeah. So yeah, that links back to something I was actually going to ask from what you mentioned before about how you generate community for audiences. And just to hear a bit more about that, I think that ties in quite well with what you were just saying.
Yeah. And for us, the community is sort of one of the most important things because, you know, it's not enough that we're just like, we're not just about broadcast. It is a two-way street. It's a two-way relationship. And for me, it's sort of two things. It's about, you know, how we, you know, what we are putting out there in terms of our content pipeline, but who's managing the channels for us. I get, you know, we manage in-house, you know, we have a sort of team across our entire portfolio, and, you know, who that team is really important to me. They have to know their community. They have to know sort of how to, you know, speak their language. And that means, you know, we need to have that global footprint and a global team. It's also being really thoughtful about sort of how passionate they are about the brands that they work on. I am all for sort of, you know, making sure that sort of everyone sort of gets a sort of chance to sort of work on different brands. And, you know, we move people around a lot, but there's also something to be said for being so passionate about your brand that you sort of, you know, instinctively how to communicate with that community. So we have a huge amount of very passionate fans ourselves as part of our team. And for me, that's also sort of, you know, sort of the magic of the team is that they sort of live and breathe their brand. Some of them were creators and influencers and still are sort of out in the industry. And that makes a sort of a really sort of powerful statement within the community as well.
Yeah. It makes it very authentic.
Yes. And it's sort of continuing to be relevant, both sort of from behind, you know, a sort of brand handle, but then also sort of out in the real world, whether it's sort of events or sort of, you know, networking, sort of industry events as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And in a digital world, where do you see the future of family-friendly content going?
I think it's a great question. And I think sort of family-friendly content, obviously Doctor Who was family-friendly content. And I think we sort of, you know, in bringing those new audiences in, we've seen a huge amount of sort of new audiences coming in from sort of, you know, this is a sort of my parents' sort of, you know, era, but we're sort of bringing in new audiences of a sort of a younger generation. But then we've also got an amazing kids and family portfolio. Ones that have been around a long time, such as Hey Dougie, and ones that have sort of captured sort of, you know, global hearts and minds, such as Bluey. You know, Bluey represents a huge portion of our growth over the last year. We had over 2 billion global views in 2023. And it is something that has cut through not only with a preschool audience, but has really sort of captured sort of pretty every age. We've had phenomenal growth on TikTok, which obviously is not a preschool sort of platform, and we are capturing sort of teenage, sort of early adults, parents, and sort of parents make sense, but we've also got a lot of sort of comments that are not parents and people that are watching just because it sort of reminds them of great things about their childhood, or they just love the show. It definitely has touched a lot of parents because of the fact that it is an educational show. It is learning through play. And that is not the case with so many children's sort of brands and IP sort of very famous. And it is something that is sort of always going to be true of Bluey, is that they are sort of driven by joy, but also really want to sort of help educate with that learning through play. It's definitely sort of softer skills and sort of teaching, you know, about sort of heartbreak and, you know, of a pet dying or of sort of, you know, real sort of tough world issues, whether that's infertility or sort of, you know, having to move house. So I think there's a lot of things that can be said. I think the future of family-friendly content really should be driven about sort of thinking about safety. You know, we really sort of are mindful as to sort of how we treat Bluey in a digital world. We think there are such powerful messages, but that we need to be choiceful about the decisions we make, what to put out, how much content to put out, and making sure that we, you know, are accountable for our actions and have that responsibility for our audiences as well. I think our audiences are obviously vast. And for parents, we know that they have a choice to make when they sort of turn on, whether it's, you know, whatever screen they're turning on for their child or for themselves. But we believe that they can get just as much out of Bluey as their child does. And we know we did some research for Father's Day, which is obviously coming up on Sunday in the UK. And Bandit, who is Bluey's father, is just such a phenomenal character and really resonates with sort of the whole audience, but in particular with dads. And there was a really key stat for me that really stood out, because it's just not often that you get sort of a fictional character as one of these, but one in three dads voted Bandit as their most aspirational father figure, which I just thought was just great, because he is, you know, he's humorous, he is warm and loving, but he is absolutely learn with play. He is just, everything about him is sort of role modeling that. And I just think that's such a good message for both fathers and the entire audience out there.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's great as well that you mentioned about the importance of all these real messages in shows like that, and actually, you know, teaching important things, touching on important topics, so that, yes, people are really being taught something, like the younger generation can, yes, have something that to kind of teach them and inspire them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we don't go heavy on the teach. Like, I think it's sort of the best way that I sort of, when I think about it, it's like, it's what Sesame Street was for me as a child. And I know Sesame Street is sort of still going, and, you know, that's a wonderful children's IP. But it's being really thoughtful about the softer skills. It's not sort of, you know, it's not math, it's not science. It is sort of real world problems, which, you know, I've got two children. and they're 2 and 7. And I, you know, I, they're, each day is a learning day for me with 2 children. They sort of come into sort of real world problems, whether that is about pets dying. And for me, that it's allowing them to really be thoughtful about their emotions and how they express them, and open up those conversations with children as well, which I think is truly fantastic.
Yeah, learning about life, really. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like Bluey's opened up a lot of doors as well, because I saw that BBC Studios partnered with Moose Toys as well for the toys for Bluey. Yeah.
So yes. And it just, one of the reasons that I feel that sort of it's such a fantastic brand is that it does lend itself so well into that space in an authentic way. And we have been very sort of choiceful about what obviously we do with sort of products and toys. But it's been fantastic to see the pickup of this. So they're incredibly successful all around the world. And it's, having the right age children, I also get to experience that at home, which is great.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they're a perfect partner to fit with Bluey. So
they are.
Yeah. And so how closely does the digital team work with like the events team? For example, like with Bluey, I saw that there's Bluey's World in Brisbane. They're like launching an immersive experience. Does your team work quite closely with that team, or is that quite separate? Or
no, incredibly closely. So we all sit as part of one team. So brands and licensing is the sort of much bigger division that I sit within, led by Nikki Sheard, who is the president of brands and licensing. He's my boss. It's fantastic. She is very focused on making sure that we are all joined up together and that we're all talking to the same audience, right? And therefore, we have to be thoughtful that sort of, you know, we are not only joined up, but that we're also amplifying the message correctly, so that sort of, you know, the audience in Brisbane obviously can go to Bluey's World when it opens. But there, you know, this could be something that could be repeated around the world. And therefore, sort of my job is to not only be thoughtful about that local approach, but also sort of make that feel global and sort of the potential and sort of getting an understanding from our audiences as to, you know, would that be something that they want brought into sort of their country and it for them?
Yeah. Yeah. I think immersive experiences can be so interesting for, you know, for the fan bases and for audiences. So yeah, that's really exciting.
Absolutely. And bringing that in, you know, we've got Bluey's Big Play that has been touring as well. There's a lot of real life sort of, you know, for real life is obviously a big thing for Bluey. And that is, you know, being thoughtful about, you know, whether it's live events, whether it's sort of, you know, plays and things like that. And we're going to be doing a lot more.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see one in London at some point soon then.
Hopefully. Yes.
Okay, I think that's a great note to wrap up on then. Thanks so much, Jasmine, for joining me. It was great to have you.
It was great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thanks to all our listeners. See you next time.